Our guest this month is Julia Kleinschmidt, Ph.D. She's director of the Patient Support Program at the Moran Eye Center in Utah. Our guest understands the emotional response and adjustment issues related to vision loss, and she's going to offer us her experienced perspective on those issues. Dr. Kleinschmidt may not have us jumping out of bed every morning ready to party, but she can help us understand why we sometimes feel the way we do. I'm looking forward to hearing what Dr. Kleinschmidt has to say today, and I hope you are too. Dr. Kleinschmidt?
Nice introduction, Dan. And greetings from Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm happy to be with all of you. I'm looking forward to sharing information, which I hope that you'll find helpful. A beautiful lady, a patient that I had with macular degeneration, tiny little lady, but just as feisty as could be, and I was struck by what a good adjustment she had made, and just almost just immediately. And one day I commented on that, and I said, you know, you really moved to a good adjustment so fast. I'm very impressed with that. And she put her hands on her hips, and she looked up at me, and she said, well, honey, nobody ever promised me a rose garden. And the point is that everyone is unique in how they face vision loss and how they get through the adjustment process and where they end up. And that's a point I want to make very strongly, because I will be talking about some of the common emotions that a lot of people experience, but not necessarily so. So you may be sitting wherever you are thinking, well, that's not true of me, and I would acknowledge that. Okay, we're all so different. We're all individual human beings, and we need to be respectful of our differences. This is one of my very favorite Helen Keller quotes. In 1919, she said, the human being is born with an incurable capacity for making the best of things. And I truly believe that. It's the basis of what I practice every day here at work. So just some basic considerations. The first one I've already mentioned, that everyone is unique. It's also important to remember that it is not abnormal or neurotic to grieve. Okay? Grief is a normal process of accommodating to life's traumas. Sometimes when I'm working with my patients, I'll say to them, you know, vision loss, in a way, can be almost like losing a loved one. It's just a huge loss. And I'll say, do you remember the last time when you've lost someone dear to you? And they'll nod their heads. And I'll say, well, do you remember how when it first happened, it was hard to even believe that you would ever have good life again? Again, some nods. And I'll say, but, you know, as the days went on and you got some things that helped and people were attentive and supportive and all, and it just seemed to get a little bit better as you went along, and they nod. And it is indeed. It is indeed a form of bereavement that many people go through, and it's absolutely normal. Some of the common grief responses to vision loss, and again, if you have not experienced these things, that's just fine. But many people will first experience shock, which is described as an emotional numbness. So some of my patients will say, you know, when the doctor said macular degeneration, I don't remember a thing after that. Some people will say, I don't remember how I got home. Others will say, for that first week or couple of weeks, I felt as if I was moving through a dream. This is shock. And again, it's okay. It's our body's way of helping us get through something that has come very hard at us. And by the way, I do want to credit with some of this information I'm giving you, I do want to credit Dr. Dean Tuttle and his book, Self-Esteem and Adjusting with Blindness. That book is considered the Bible of adjustment and psychosocial issues related to blindness. But going on, after shock, many people will get into denial. Again, it's pretty normal. Some of the ways that they express this is, well, some will do doctor shopping. So here at the Moran Eye Center in Salt Lake City, we'll sometimes have patients who come in from surrounding states. They'll come in from Idaho or Nevada, where they were diagnosed. But they don't believe it. They'll tell their doctor up there, there's just no way. I'll go to Salt Lake City where, you know, I'll find out the real scoop. We have to tell them the same news. They said, well, what do these people in Utah know? I'll go to New York. I'll go to Boston. I'll go to Los Angeles. There they'll know. It's, again, just a difficulty in accepting reality. Another way that you see it, and this one kind of concerns me, is people who continue to drive when they really should not be driving. Okay, that's a very frightening one, not only from the standpoint of danger to the individual, but danger to others, plus all the legal liability that they let themselves in for. So this is one that's very concerning. But generally, people will move away when they feel they're more ready to accept the reality. They'll move away from that. When people are experiencing denial and they're saying things like, I know that this is temporary. I'm just not getting the right medication. That's all. I need something. I need an operation, and then I'll be able to see again. And what I'll usually tell my patients is, you know what? There's a lot of good research going on right now, excellent research. So I'm not going to deny your hope. I'm not going to deny what you're saying. Hold on to that hope. But in the meantime, let's deal with what your reality is today. Okay? And usually, looking at it that way, we can go ahead and move on to doing what we need to do. A lot of individuals will experience depression, a sadness. And again, it's a part of the process. The depression may be exhibited in the form of anger. I run into people who are pretty angry. I hear the expression frequently, well, so much for the golden years, they'll say. And that's pretty normal. Sometimes some bitterness. Why me? Why me? That's a good question. I have no answer. I'm sorry. You'll see individuals, as a part of their depression, isolate themselves. They don't want to go to church anymore, or the neighborhood fix-it gentleman no longer wants to go out and help the kids with their bicycles, and they tend to isolate themselves. Egocentricity is another thing that we'll sometimes see, and that is simply a turning inward. Sometimes the enormity of what you're facing is just so overwhelming that you just don't have the energy or the focus for things outside of yourself. Okay, all of these things, very normal. The vast majority of our patients will go on to a time of reassessment. Reassessment is a time where, well, some of my patients have described it to me as they were just getting tired of being down and being isolated. They were just finding themselves more and more just ready to move on. Reassessment is a time when people will start realizing that the majority of their personal attributes, in other words, the biggest part of themselves, it's still there. It's untouched. So they start thinking of, okay, I don't see so well, darn it. But you know what? I'm still a great grandma. I'm still a good mother to my children. I can still model for my family the things that they need to do. At this time, the focus will frequently shift from half empty to half full. So it'll be, yeah, so I can't see my grandchildren's faces very well anymore. But by golly, I can still hug them and love them and smooch them up and tell them stories and bake cookies for them and so on. Individuals around this time start moving from thinking, oh my gosh, this awful thing has happened to me, to, okay, so what am I going to do about it? So when I do orientations to vision loss here at the Moran Eye Center, this is one of the things I emphasize. And I'll say, you know what? Here you are. You know, here you are. You could be at home with the covers pulled up, feeling sorry for yourself, and instead here you are seeking out information, trying to find out what you can do to make your situation better. Good for you. Good for you. You're on a roll. And for those of you who are listening to this presentation today, I want to point it out to you as well. you could be feeling sorry for yourself, and instead you're involved in this event and trying to seek out information, get details on what you might be able to do and different perspectives from which to view your situation. So good for you, too. Most individuals will reach a stage of acceptance. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that they like the vision loss. Okay, that it doesn't mean that. But what they're learning to do is to let go of the disruptive emotions. Now, notice I say not just emotions, but the disruptive emotions. Disruptive emotions are emotions that get in the way of living your life, your daily life, in a good way. Okay, so most of us, you know, when we're struggling with things in our lives, we'll have our ups and downs, and we'll have a good day or a bad day, or we'll have maybe a drop in vision again, and here we go again, feeling kind of sad about it. But for the most part, when we let go of the disruptive emotions, we're able to once again attend to our daily tasks or whatever it is that we're about in life. Individuals at this point start seeing the positives in their lives, even with or despite vision loss. They usually will start involving themselves again with the world outside of themselves, and they'll start attending to their tasks and their goals. Dr. Tuttle has come up with, I think, a very interesting way of looking at going about adjustment. And he's come up with what he calls the major tasks of adjustment. And these are what Dr. Tuttle talks about. He says, first of all, we do need to let go of those disruptive emotions. That's always the first step. Because then when we can do that, we can turn to what the next step is, and that's accessing the resources that will make our lives better. That's the adaptive devices, the magnifiers, the lights, the templates, whatever it is we need, whatever training we may need, whatever support services, support groups, or whatever else we need. The research in this area is very, very conclusive. There is a strong relationship between good adjustment and accessing resources. That's critical. The third of Dr. Tuttle's tasks is one that I really had not thought about until I started, you know, getting some experience in this field. And the third task is learning to deal with a sighted world. Now, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? But a big part of getting along well with vision loss is learning, and sometimes you have to relearn some of the social skills. When you go to church and you can't see everyone's faces, how do you handle that? Okay, you need to come up with a strategy, think it through, and see how you can make that work for you. Ordering, going to restaurants, whatever it is, you deal with a sighted world constantly, and you need to be able to have the skills to navigate well in that world. Now, have you ever wondered why it is that some people just do seem to just sort of breeze through this experience? Others just struggle. Some are absolutely devastated and incapacitated for a while, and there are a lot of people in between. So what's the difference? What are some of the factors that can influence adjustment? And there are actually many, many, many factors, but I'm going to settle in on just a few of them that I think are quite pertinent. One is personality. You know, it just seems like some people are just born with more of a just go with it attitude, more of a just not really hang loose, but just kind of go along, you know, bend with the wind sorts of thing, sort of way of looking at things. Some people just sort of tend to take life as it comes and they're okay. Not all of us are that way. Some of us are a lot more intense, and but that kind of a personality helps. Another aspect of personality that can really help a lot is just simply a sense of humor. And when I do the orientations, and of course these are all people who are new to vision loss and their families, and when I talk about the importance of humor, some of them just kind of roll their eyes, you know, and I know that they're thinking, right, Kleinschmidt, you know, there's nothing funny about blindness. Well, you know, there's something funny about just about everything. Someone once said, a life without humor is like a carriage without springs, jolted by every pebble in the road. And I think that's true. And one of the things I do look for in my patients, and I'm always so reassured, is when they start just laughing about some of the things that'll happen. And if we had more time, I'd tell you some of the stories. I know you would have some stories as well. But just some of the funny things that happen, and what's important is that you look at them as funny things. Okay? Another aspect or another factor that can influence adjustment is prior coping experiences. I've had many patients tell me, you know what, I'm going to be fine with this vision loss thing because, you know, I've lost two husbands. I buried two husbands. If I can do that, I can do anything. Or they'll say, you know, my mother died when I was 8 years old and I essentially had to raise my siblings. If I can do that, I can do anything. So people who have had good coping skills and who have coped with things in the past tend to generally take on this thing of vision loss more readily. Prior attitudes about blindness can be important. The experiences that we've had in the past with individuals who are visually impaired, I'm always very reassured when I'll have a patient say to me, well, you know what? My mother had macular degeneration, and she got along just fine, so I'll be fine too. Okay, that's a beautiful thing to see and to hear. The age at the time of blindness can be a factor, although it's not a real certain one, but in general, babies who are born blind, children who develop blinding conditions early in their lives will generally get along and adjust pretty quickly, but not always. So this is one that we can kind of look at and consider. Degree of vision is a factor. Now, let me ask you this. When you think about it, who would have the hardest adjustment? Somebody who is just kind of visually impaired, kind of moderately visually impaired, or somebody who's extremely visually impaired. Say somebody who's been in a car accident or something. Okay, I wish I could hear what you're thinking right now. The answer actually is that individuals who are just kind of in the middle frequently are the ones who struggle the most. That's counterintuitive, isn't it? But what we've found is that individuals who are very blinded have no choice. They're dead in the water. If they don't go ahead and get some training and get devices and, you know, go ahead and take some action. People in the middle, and I wonder if some of you all have been this way, they tend to kind of fudge. They'll say, well, I don't need to use a cane. I was being careless. I was walking too fast. No, I don't need a magnifier. If I really hold it right and get the light just right, I can do it. That sort of thing. So they can fudge, and they tend to frequently just kind of hold off on things that could really be of great help to them. Stability of vision is an important one. People with diabetic retinopathy, which is a very uncertain one. I mean, people can be seen fine one day, and then they'll have a hemorrhage or swelling develops in their eyes, and they can't see, but then it's treated, and it's better, then it's worse, then it's better. That can be just extremely difficult to deal with. Some other factors, additional complications that a person might be dealing with. I always feel so sad when I'm talking to a patient and she'll say, yeah, this is bad. I got some bad news today, but my husband died 2 months ago and my daughter was just diagnosed with breast cancer. You know, life just hits us so hard and so fast sometimes. And I think my thought is that when somebody has to deal with vision loss, they shouldn't have to put up any more with migraine headaches or toothaches or anybody in their family dying or getting sick. Don't you think that's right? I'll bet you all would agree with me on that one. And that's just not the way it works. Another factor, philosophy of life, and my Rose Garden lady illustrated that one very well. people who say, life is certainly not a bowl of cherries. You just take it as it comes. That they have that philosophical view of life and what happens, and that seems to help. Another factor, the role of the physician. I bless the ophthalmologists who say to their patients, you know what? There's not much I can do for your retina right now, given the state of medical science right now. But you know what? There's so much out there to help. Okay, that's just a beautiful thing. It sets our patients off on just the right viewpoint as they start on this road. Personal support networks. We know that no matter what happens to us in life, if we have support, it can make all the difference in the world. Another factor, access to resources and services. Rural living is just wonderful. It's beautiful. I envy people out there in the countryside. But when you need services, it's not always a good place to be. Another factor, and the last one that I'll bring up today, is access to role models. Again, our patients who've had family members who've done well despite vision loss, that can help a lot. Or who had a neighbor who did well and who did this and that despite vision loss. I just wanted to go back again, the major tasks of adjustment, just so you can really think about these. Number one, letting go of those disruptive emotions. Number two, accessing resources. Get out there, make the calls, ask for referrals, check things out, be informed. Okay? And the third, learn to deal with a sighted world. Learn whatever skills you need so you can get out there and be with people and be accomplishing the things that you want to accomplish. I want to close with one of my very favorite quotes from Robert Louis Stevenson, who said, "Life is not a matter of holding good cards, but of playing a poor hand well." I hope that some of what I've discussed with you today will be of help to you in playing this poor hand of vision loss well. Thank you so very, very much.